Hello, everyone. This is Luc Jean-Louis, the host of the Deep Voice Man Show. Thanks for joining us today. We have a treat in store for you guys. Our guest is Ian Watchhorn. He's an example of a successful, inspiring immigrant story. He came to this country from Ireland, and he studied architecture, and he worked hard in that field, in that industry for others, but he realized he wanted to work hard for himself, so he transitioned from being an employee to an entrepreneur, something a lot of people have dreams about, but he was actually able to have the courage to make that leap and to proceed to be successful. So he's an inspiring story, someone who has incredible lessons to teach us all. But he's also a very busy man, so we're very lucky to have him. He was able to carve out some time in his packed schedule to sit down and have a chat with us. So thank you so much for that, Ian. And so we'll get right into it. I'm curious, can you tell us about yourself and how you first gravitated towards doing what you do now?
Yes, Luc. First up, thank you very much for having me. And well done to you on your enterprise as well with this podcast. I understand it's relatively new, and I've listened into a number of your episodes so far, and they're super informative, giving great insight to me. And so, yeah, I hope to be able to share a bit of my experience here today.
Wow, thank you so much.
Of course.
You got it.
Yes, so a bit about me and how I gravitated towards architecture. As you mentioned in your intro, I'm from Ireland, so I grew up in Ireland, and I studied architecture in Ireland. That was kind of when I graduated from architecture. It was probably 2010-11, a couple of years into the sort of crisis and economic crisis that was sort of affecting the globe. And Ireland was probably one of the biggest offenders during that period, and so we were one of the countries that found it most difficult to come out of that crisis. So it was a perfect opportunity for me then to travel. And so I did that. I spent a year working in the Netherlands and a year working in Norway. Subsequently, then I came to New York, and I've been in New York for the last 7 years. So that's kind of the story as to how I came to be in New York. And then as it relates to architecture, I've always had an interest in sort of understanding how things work in making things in art, and architecture somehow brought all those interests together. And it was my dad, you know, ultimately, I think when you're 18 years old and, you know, no matter what country you're from, you're sort of asked to sort of choose a general direction of occupation.
Right.
It was my dad who initially sort of suggested, oh, Ian, you know, this could be a good fit for all of your interests. And, you know, I think as maybe the story for most people, they start university and, you know, enjoy the sort of change that comes from high school, let's say, to university. Enjoys the atmosphere of meeting new people. But ultimately, I guess it was probably third year maybe of a five-year degree that I sort of got bitten by the bug that is architecture and sort of fell in love with it and really began to take it very seriously and was more intentional then with my decisions. And that's kind of the background of my interest in architecture and what brought me to New York.
Wow, that's wonderful. And so it's interesting how you always had an interest in art, and I'm guessing you obviously know how to draw because, you know, you have to be able to draw to be an architect, right? That's great. So you took one of your talents and interests, and you were able to parlay that into a career and into an industry where you could be well compensated for your skills and talents and whatnot. And it's great that your father gave you that advice, you know, to go into that direction. That's amazing. And New York is probably one of the best places, I think, to work as an architect.
It is. Obviously. It is.
Yeah.
There is, beyond New York being a huge city and therefore you have you're exposed to sort of larger projects and more, well, more of everything, let's say. There's also just the density of sort of the world. It, as a city, it's kind of a sort of center of culture. And so it attracts the world's best in every industry. And so architecture is no different than that, to that. So, you know, that's in terms of the employee base, but also in terms of the firms that practice here. You have a lot of good architecture offices throughout the world, and you know, they think about expanding their operations. It's not uncommon for them to open a practice in New York. So yeah, there was always a sort of great depth of opportunity and a great depth of talented offices for me to learn my trade here. That's probably what held me in the city. And yeah, ultimately then to your point, I wanted to transition from, you know, being an employee, having learned my trade in these various offices, to undertaking that that effort myself, and you know, hopefully being rewarded in many different ways for taking that decision.
Okay.
So that's in terms of the freedom that one gets as their own their own boss, so to speak. Being able to shape an environment that you think you know, others will prosper within. That's a super important sort of ambition of mine. I'm certainly not doing this, engaging in this effort solely for myself. It's with a view to bringing other people on board and affording them the kind of lifestyle that I think can be created through a particularly successful and ultimately well-rounded organization. So, yeah.
That's amazing. You know, and New York is definitely the best place to do that. And because I think it was Pope John Paul II who said that New York is the sort of like the capital of the world, so to speak. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very blessed to have been born and raised in New York City. I love the city, you know, and you mentioned that, you know, by being an entrepreneur and going out on your own, you know, one of the one of your motivations for doing that was the you mentioned the word freedom. And I think that's so key. You know, obviously when you're tied to a job working for someone else, you have to play by their rules. But when you own your own business, you're able to, you know, work when you have to. Maybe not in the beginning, it might be a lot of hours, but it does allow you freedom. And you mentioned lifestyle, which I think is so important to have the specific lifestyle that you want and whatnot. And it allows you to shape the environment in the ways that you can, you know, create your own workplace culture that, you know, fits you the best. So that's amazing. I think a lot of people should go out there and, you know, be an entrepreneur. Now, a lot of people are fearful of that because obviously there's a high failure rate. So you have to, it's so important to be educated first. And you were educated, you worked in the field. So you sort of knew what to do. You know what to, you know, you know what you're doing. So that, I think that's incredible.
Yeah, I, you know, I probably anticipated undertaking this venture many, many years ago. I mean, I could say upwards of like 4 or 5. And so in the 7 years that I've been working in New York, probably a number of years into that time frame, I sort of thought that that would be a really interesting thing to do. That, you know, also if I was to leverage my my background coming from Ireland, I thought that there was a good sort of footing of Irish people also in the AEC industry, which is what we call the architectural engineering construction industry. And that, you know, at the very least, that sort of common ground could be leveraged as a sort of intro into the industry on my own sort of 2 feet. And so that, maybe early in my time in New York, began to sort of settle in as a possibility. And so from that point, I really sort of, any position I took, and I worked in 3 or 4 offices in that 7-year period, any position I took was really with a view to educating myself in the areas of the profession that I would need to be able to, you know, ultimately close the loop on my skill set. Because you know that's the thing of being an entrepreneur in any given field. You somehow need to have oversight on the entire process. That includes your craft, that is in my case architecture, but then also sort of the business side of engagements and you know, where does work come from? Where does one garner work? So there was, you know, I made an effort, more than sort of 4 or 5 years ago to begin to develop a network that could support me in that endeavor as well. And yeah, you mentioned this thing of freedom. I think that has many sort of facets. There's the freedom of time that relates to your craft. There's the freedom of decision making that you have sort of ownership over the work. There's a lot of, an architect, I think there's a lot of satisfaction that comes from that. There's financial freedom. You know, there's obviously a ceiling, I think, within every profession as an employee, and that ceiling, you know, it seems to draw away from you quite a bit when you're a young employee, but at some point in time, it sort of becomes this kind of fixed thing that you can't get through. So, you know, in undertaking your own venture, you sort of lift that ceiling off. So there was certainly an awareness of that in a very, very expensive city as New York. I think, you know, to have a kind of lifestyle that that gave you the freedom to go back to that word, do the things that you want to do, you know, you also need to have a certain income to be able to do that. So, and ultimately, the freedom, I, you know, in undertaking this effort, I was an employee for many years, and it was at that point that I thought and decided that I would like to do this. And so I believe that I've sort of began to design this firm from the perspective of the employee. And that's a really important distinction for me. Many firms, they begin to think directly of the client and their needs, and employees are only sort of a sort of means to fulfill ultimately those needs of the client. Whereas I think in reverse, that if you create an environment that allows, you know, your team to flourish to the best of their ability, to be able to get the best out of one another, you know, so that they feel like they're in a very stimulating environment, and they have autonomy and their ambition is without ceiling in their own right. I think ultimately it is, you know, the end product, which is the work, and therefore that which the client sort of engages with and inherits, that that benefits. And so, yeah, I was just, you know, I think when you do work in many different offices, there's always different frustrations. There's no such thing as somehow the perfect job. When one particular job can be good in one facet and frustrate you in another. And so I kind of documented these, you know, the positives and the negatives of each experience, with a view to establishing my own office. And now I'm trying to sort of implement some of those ideas. And so far we can touch on this, the sort of time frame of this year in parallel with COVID. But so far things have been going really well. And we're taking on our first full-time employee at the beginning of next month. So,
Wow, that's amazing. And it's interesting how you were able to dial into that network of folks. You said there's a lot of Irish Americans already in the industry, which is great. And, you know, networking is so important. They say that the most successful, luckiest people in the world have very wide networks, and that's part of why they're successful. It gives them access to opportunities, job opportunities or whatnot. And particularly in an expensive city like New York, you definitely want to have that network to be successful. And it's great. And you're very innovative and creative, so you sort of kind of reverse the process when it comes to how employees are, you know, looked at and considered. So that's amazing. And I definitely want to touch back on this idea of freedom later on in the interview. I think that's so important. So I'm curious, when it comes to the current state of architecture, I'm curious if you can paint a picture for us, like how are things going now? I know that with the pandemic, it's probably posed some challenges. How has the industry been affected by it, and how have they been able to overcome it or attempt to overcome it?
Yeah, I think the architecture industry and the construction industry is one that's always a little bit hard to read in terms of sort of at an immediate moment in time, because on the one hand, it's one of the first industries to sort of take a hit in a sort of massive crisis, economic crisis. On the other hand, realizing a building can take many, many years. And so from the moment that a project is potentially initiated with a client to when it's completed in the context of New York, if it was a sort of mid-rise or even high rise to sort of to make that to sort of exhaust that idea, that can be 3 to 4 years. So it's you'll still see projects that were already underway, and so they were committed to before anybody knew about this pandemic, and so they're all sort of continuing. But how I see, in the immediate context of New York, I think we'll see that some of these larger scale projects are not being initiated, certainly not throughout this pandemic period, but that people are sort of shifting towards renovating instead of potentially moving. If we talked about the housing market, for example, instead of moving and looking to purchase like a unit in a new building, as it may be, or any individual entrepreneur, building a project that serves their interest in any way, I think we're going to see, and we are seeing, a lot more kind of renovation projects. And that sort of aligns with ourselves. As you mentioned, my name is Ian Watchorn, so our office is called Watchorn Architecture and Urbanism. And so the acronym then is WAU, and we phonetically pronounce that WOW. So if I refer to WOW in the interview, it's the name of the office. But yeah, so WOW established, having established, having been established this year, we've been able to somehow see the silver lining of this COVID predicament, because we are a sort of new and nimble and flexible outfit, and we are small, given that we've just started. We're well positioned to sort of pitch for and undertake these renovation type projects. Nobody, a client is not, even if you've worked on many large scale projects before, they're going to want to see you work through the scales of a project before you potentially land a bigger commission of like a mid-rise building or something. So we've been well positioned due to our size and due to the sort of status of the industry, with more potential refurbishment projects on the market to be able to undertake those projects. Well, I think no matter what industry we're in, then hopefully we are on the we've reached the peak of the mountain that was COVID, and we're probably just over the top, and we're starting to come down. So hopefully things do return to some kind of normality that we experienced before. And that in itself also could be good timing for us, because we'll have a number of these projects under our belt and be in a position to take on larger work.
And particularly since you're bringing on more people, which is great as well.
Yeah.
And so that's amazing. I think WOW's a great name for a firm, by the way. And
yeah, thank you.
and did very creative. And it's interesting how you mentioned the silver lining, how you're able, how a lot of folks, including yourself, are able to kind of turn crisis into opportunity. Like that, in Mandarin, they say there's a, I think the symbol for crisis also includes opportunity, which is amazing. And
Interesting.
And you guys are nimble and well positioned, which allows you to be flexible. And so that's great. We've noticed that with a lot of entrepreneurs, they're able to turn crisis into opportunity, which is amazing. And so I'm curious. You mentioned the mountaintop analogy, which I totally agree with. Obviously, in the future, we'll be in a post-pandemic world. Hopefully, it comes sooner rather than later. I'm curious, where do you see the architecture industry going in the future, and where do you see yourself and your firm in that future?
Really good question, really broad question. And I think, I describe what I like. Well, what I like to describe as the bread and butter of our industry, and also as it relates to us sort of engaging, interacting with the real estate industry, is residential and office as a sort of typology, essentially the basis of how we live and work. But if I was to sort of, answer your question on a sort of global level, I think that we've seen over the last number of decades this continuous urbanization of the world's population. People, mass numbers of people moving into cities all over the world, and now those cities, in search of work primarily, but then they also need to be accommodated. And we see a lot of cities, around the world globally, like bursting at the seams or unable to accommodate, not having the infrastructure to accommodate these people, but from an architectural perspective, not having a sort of supply of housing and dignified housing and good housing to accommodate these people. So, if I say the bread and butter of our industry, and we're privileged enough to work on, high spec projects, maybe museums and stuff, that is always going to be a niche aspect of our fields, but the bread and butter is sort of housing. And so I think as an architect, we consider the greatest challenge of our generation is going to be our ability to house and create accommodation for the world's ever more urbanizing population. I mean, I know the figure is kind of reversed from the 1800s to where we are today, where 20% of people used to live in 20% of the world's population used to live in cities in the 1800s versus 80% in rural environments, and that has sort of directly switched. We're looking at 80% of the world's population living in cities and 20% in rural environments. And so, there's a big task, I think, for everybody, both in the first and the third world countries, to make provisions and to be able to sort of have the foresight to build sustainable communities in urban and suburban frameworks. So that's something we really want to get involved with and think deeply about. I think a lot of, as it relates to that same sort of subject, then I talk about the quality of housing. I think, one way that we think a little bit differently than certain architects or industry influencers is I feel around the world due to that same lack of accommodation and the need to house more people, that there's like a race to the bottom in terms of like the amount of space that one can comfortably live in. And we all talk about our small apartments in New York City, but we're obviously, we're still, this is very much a first world country, and you see in other parts of the world, people living in increasingly smaller spaces. And so, I'm interested not in the city as an actual sustainable center, for multi-generational families. I dislike this kind of idea that, oh, we're, we've had one kid, we're about to have a second, now it's time to move to the suburbs because the city, it doesn't provide enough space for our needs. I think that we need a sort of measurable amount of space that can create kind of an environment where people can, live and be in the city sustainably through their lifetime, as opposed to this kind of, yin and yang culture of urban and rural environments and suburban environments. So,
Okay, wow. That was a
Yeah,
lot
that's
for us
kind of
to
a
chew on.
broad response, but the sort of in terms of the state of the profession, I think that's going to be one of our
Right.
biggest challenges in the years to come and something we really want to engage with.
Got it. Well, I'm very thankful for it. And so there's obviously a lot of global potential out there. And right here in the city and right here in the country, I mean, obviously the U.S. population is going to grow, they say, tremendously. I think we're going to get to 500 million people in a few decades. And New York City's population is definitely going to grow. So there's definitely a lot of potential right here in this country, in this city, New York City specifically. So yeah, and we know that obviously the global population is going to go up, particularly in third world countries, and more people are going to move to cities, just like you said, and suburban areas. So people are going to leave these rural areas because of technological advancements, which help people to farm and with more efficiently, whatnot. So yeah, I think you're on the right trend, way path. I think it's an industry that's definitely going to have a need. That'll be needed very much in the future. So I'm curious now. The thing is, obviously, because of this potential, there's going to be a lot of people who want to become architects, who want to, join the gold rush, so to speak. And I'm curious, with all the architects out there, and it's a wide open industry, if for anyone who's motivated, how do you stand out? Like, how does a firm stand out, differentiate themselves, and what is the competitive advantage, so to speak?
Yeah, I think firms are sort of advertise themselves in two distinct ways.
Right.
That is that they offer a potential, and they add so much potential to the project. That's the firm who can kind of bring a lot to a given project. And then on the other hand,
Right.
there's the sort of firm that sort of talks about de-risking, ultimately building any building, large, medium, or small, there's a huge risk involved, and so there are firms that sort of protect against that risk. The architecture industry has sort of splintered into firms that describe themselves as design architects, and those are the ones that bring a lot of potential to the project, and
Right.
executive architects. Those are the architects that execute the project, and those are the architects that like de-risk the project.
Right.
And so I, again, going back to what I sort of said earlier in the interview,
Yeah.
knowing that I wanted to ultimately start an architectural practice, I prescriptively selected the offices that I would like to work in so that I could understand and learn the sort of full spectrum
Right.
of the profession, and expose myself to the different project stages and phases of the profession. So
Yeah.
I gained experience in both of those areas, and I see then WOW as a sort of full service architecture firm that brings both of those aspects of the equation.
Right.
On a medium to large scale project, it's not uncommon to carry for the client to carry two architects. So they will carry a design architect. And they will carry an executive architect, and those two parties will collaborate on the project together.
Right.
But with that collaboration comes, challenges, and
Right.
there's a premium to be paid in terms of the
Yeah.
fee as well. And there's always elements of the project that get lost in translation between those two
Right.
Parties when they're working on the project together. They're ultimately in different offices, with communication systems today. Of course, there's a sort of there are many ways to attempt to align and communicate the project between those two parties, but there's always lapses in communication that result in error, and so yeah, WOW is an office that is a full service architecture firm. So, we bring the creative side of the profession, but then we also bring the sort of analytical side. I'm also really interested in this conversation between the left brain and the right brain. The left brain being the right brain being the creative side, and the left brain being the
Right.
analytical side. And And this is also kind of the reason why I really feel that profession has sort of split in two different types of firms, because it's impossible for one individual to excel, you know, to the nth degree in both of those areas. I'm also very interested in sports, and I played a lot of sports when I was growing up. And coming from Ireland, coming from Europe, you know, soccer, as you call it here, football as you call it in Ireland and Europe, was you know, was a sport that we played and watched quite a lot. And so I describe, you know, in our office we have forwards or attackers, midfielders, and defenders. And the forwards are the creative people in the office, and the defenders are the analytical.
Right.
And then the midfielders are those who can sort of span both areas. But
right.
But it goes without saying that nobody can excel in each area. It's you know, no professional sports person is equally as good an attacker as they are a defender, as they are a midfielder. You know, each has their sort of area of expertise. And so we try to shape a project team in that same way and be able to give you know, all of the aspects that are required to deliver that project to the project. So yeah, I think our sort of our unique selling point, if you will, is that we're like a full service architecture office, and we bring both sort of sides of the equation to the table.
Okay, wonderful. So it's interesting that the soccer analogy really, I think, helps to explain it for a lot of people, including myself and the audience, I think for many of the audience. And it's so true about the left brain and the right brain. A lot of people tend to lean towards one side more than the other. And it's interesting how you explain the industry in the two ways, in the two separate groups that they're in. You know, definitely helps me to understand the architecture industry much better than I did before. And there's obviously, with all the potential, I'm sure there's enough business for everyone, of course. And I'm curious, obviously with any firm, you know, networking and referrals is so important. We met through networking, and, you know, obviously every firm wants to get to a point where they're relying on referrals for the most part, or solely relying on referrals. What is your advice for folks when it comes to networking and in getting referrals?
Yeah, I think, you know, WOW has, as we've touched on, had a sort of successful year. We're undertaking a number of projects. We can touch on that later, but let's just say 4 or 5 projects. And I think if I was to trace back, you know, the opportunities that those projects arose from, it was relationships that were established many years ago. So I think my advice to anybody, you know, who wants to form their own business in time to come, is to establish those relationships when you don't need them. You know,
right.
So many years ago, I sort of broadened. I sort of thought that it would be a wise move with this enterprise in mind to establish relationships with people not only in my inner circles, but outside of that. I think every profession is sort of guilty of this, but architects in particular. Architects, you know, love to socialize with other architects. We go to architectural exhibitions and lectures, and we have a circle of friends that are architects. But, you know, you're not going to get any new project or opportunity from another architect. In fact, they're actually, you know, competing with you or against you, however you want to phrase it, for those opportunities. Yeah. So I sort of broadened my network, you know, particularly to parallel industries. Of course, you have to have a sort of common interest. And I don't see network, you know, networking is sort of in some circles thrown around as this kind of dirty word or something. I think networking is just forming friendships, mutually beneficial friendships, hopefully one day. But if they don't materialize in that, that's also fine. I think life is like too short and too precious to, you know, and continually engage with people that you don't relate to, that you don't admire in any in some way, because you think that there's a sort of financial benefit or otherwise. And we hope to be able to form a sort of network of you know, people that have the same sort of outlook on life as we do, you know, which is one where we all sort of help each other along, in as much a friend capacity as a professional capacity.
Right.
And that those friendships sort of bear fruit in a professional capacity is you know, is ultimately it's great. And when you do business with friends, I always say it takes kind of twice the amount of work in terms of just understanding the you know, the distinction between, you know, being friends and doing business together. But the rewards are like threefold when you complete a project with a client that has over the course of the project become a friend, you know, you can celebrate that achievement together, and that's not only to sort of outline the sort of client architect relationship, but in any venture that involves multiple people, which all ventures do, the reward is so much more success, so much more. Beneficial.
That's so, you know, that's so important, what you said about forming friendships. And obviously when you do work with friends, the reward, as you mentioned, was threefold, three times as satisfying. You know, there's an old saying, you know, you never have to sell a friend. And, you know, if you start forming friendships with people before you need to sell anything or make any requests, later on, you know, obviously it's, you know, as they say, you don't have to sell the friend, and they'll want to help you out. So it's interesting how you said you want to form relationships, even when you don't need them, which I think is so key. And, you mentioned, how people need to socialize with different circles. I think that's so important. You know, if you just socialize with people who know all the same people you do, then you're not being introduced much, you know, to other different types of people. You know, everyone knows at least a few hundred different people. And so when you meet one person, they're almost like a bridge to several hundred people more that you can get access to. Even if someone doesn't need your services, they may know someone else or whatnot.
Yes, exactly.
You know, so I think that's so important. So you've given us a lot of great advice in that realm when it comes to networking. So I'm very thankful for that. I'm curious, what advice would you give to someone who wants to transition from being an employee to an entrepreneur, and perhaps someone who wants to start their own architecture firm or who wants to go into architecture as a profession?
I think you know, over the course of my own thinking in that regard, I think one really important occupation to sort of get into is to sort of spot your weaknesses. And when you're still an employee, I mean, they're not even weaknesses. They're like just deficiencies that you haven't gotten around to filling in yet. And, you know, so when you're still an employee and you still have the security of your wage and, you know, everything that comes with your employment, that's kind of the perfect time to sort of infill those deficiencies. And I really undertook that effort myself as well. I read a book early, in the time, let's say, that I was thinking about one day undertaking this effort, called The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this book. Yeah.
Oh, I'm familiar.
You're familiar, right. I knew you. I suspected you would be, but didn't want to assume. But yeah, it speaks of everyone. It speaks of a story about somebody who's really talented at their craft. I'm an architect, and I can consider myself to be a good architect. But it's what that it's one thing to work to be good at the thing that you are. In the story that Michael Gerber writes, he uses a sort of metaphor. Well, he uses the story of a girl who's a baker, and she's a really amazing baker. And he is her mentor through her endeavor to start her own business. And the first portion of the story is about a baker who's not able to succeed in business, because being very good at your craft does not make you by default very good in business. And Michael Gerber obviously then advises her, principally gives her the advice, and sort of distinguishes this idea of working in your business versus working on your business. And as an entrepreneur, you kind of have to pull yourself away, for better or worse, from working in your business so that you can work on your business. And that was like a key piece of advice that really was a turning point for me in terms of being an employee and exclusively working in the business, working on the craft that is architecture, to opening my eyes up to all of the other aspects that would need to come to fruition in a successful business. And I think the hardest part then is somehow starting, because although you have this information and you know that it's important to carve, time within your schedule to work on your business, well, when you're a one-man show, you still have to do it all. So I can't wait for, my colleague, as I said, to join at the beginning of February, which is next week, so that I'll be able to carve further time away to working on the business. But, then back to your point of the advice that I would give to someone in employment wanting to be an entrepreneur. Firstly, that's a great book. Pick that up and read it, and it will open your mind up to the areas that you need to educate yourself on. So we've touched on networking. That would have been something that was identified, that you can be the best architect in the world, but if people don't know about you, and unfortunately, this is a sort of sad state of many architects in the world, really, really talented architects who can't get work because, they just, they are people who are very much work, head down, working in their craft, and not head up, sort of, running the business in a way that brings in more work and opportunity. So, that led me then on a kind of multi-year effort to learn about different aspects of business. And I really wasn't a big reader, I think, when I was younger. I think I read the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and that's about all I can sort of say. But then when you have like an invested interest and an end goal, I suddenly became a very avid reader, and I would read many different books that I felt were filling in the gaps of my expertise. So yeah, when you're an employee, take that opportunity to understand all of the sort of core competencies that you would need. ENIT is a great place to start, because it gives you a really high level overview of the difference between working in and on a business. And then, find opportunities. It doesn't always have to be in books, but find opportunities to educate yourself on those different aspects that will ultimately all need to come together to have a successful business.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you so much for that advice. And yeah, and it's a great book, The E-Myth. Every entrepreneur should read it. And it's interesting how you talked before about freedom, time freedom, and the lifestyle, the several different freedoms you mentioned. And that's so important to make, to own your business and not have your business own you, so to speak. A lot of people make that mistake of being owned by their business, and they end up working more hours than they did as an employee. And I don't think that was, I don't think that was the point, that for a lot of people to start their business was to work more hours and be owned by their business, And it's interesting, you know, and I think that that's one of the reasons why we have a high, there's a high failure rate for businesses. A lot of people, they don't work on their business, so to speak. And
yep.
I think, and they don't understand the importance of networking, trying to meet with different types of people. So I think that's key critical advice, so we can turn these, you know, these statistics around, so to speak.
Yep.
And I'm curious, what advice would you give someone if they're looking for an architectural firm to work with? Obviously, they can come to you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But what
we only want any people to come to us. That we've communicated to and feel that we are the best position to sort of to handle their project. So yeah, I think that's probably where my answer will segue, but you can continue your question.
No, I was just going to say, what advice would you give to someone who's just looking for an architectural firm? I guess this, and you know, for any kind of project, do they have to look for something specific, or where should they go, online, or?
Yeah, I think that's the kind of, firstly, and I always try to think from the client's perspective,
right,
in terms of how we will ultimately design and position our business. And we're a year one enterprise, so we don't have all the answers yet. And it's important, we probably won't have all the answers in year 10 either, but we're going to, you know, engage in daily conversation in our office and critique and try to understand, you know, the position of our office in terms of the client's needs. But you know, I guess coming back to the networking aspect, and having long-standing relationships with people in your network, you know, engaging an architect is also because you're going to engage the services of a contractor and ultimately construct a project. So we're talking about like a high sort of cost of entry, or and somehow the architect is the first person that you engage with on that journey. You know, you may be, depending on the size of a project, of course, we could be talking about if it's a big building, a small building, even an apartment. You know, you're touching hundreds of thousands of dollars at sort of an entry level. And then therefore, you know, you're going to work with an architect who's going to bring you through that process and be your sort of key point person through the whole thing. So, of course, you want to identify, the architect is ultimately a designer at the end of the day, and so you want to identify with the kind of work that that you see on their, well, whether it's their website or has been communicated to you in any other way. But ultimately, it's a relationship of trust, and so it's important to, we don't rush anybody into a decision to work with us. We just let them know that we're here, we're ready when they are. We have the expertise. We try to communicate that expertise, and you know, if and when they feel comfortable to work with us, you know, hopefully they will engage us to do so, and you know, and just because it's that kind of like high cost of entry, and there's a lot at stake and there's a lot of risk involved in the entire effort, and it can be a multi-year effort or it can be a 6 or 12 month effort, you know, you really have to have a sort of trusting relationship with your architect in that regard. So we try to position ourselves in that way, and that's regardless of it's a private individual, as I said, wanting to renovate their apartment, or it's a developer who is, you know, renovating an entire plot or property or building or constructing a building from the ground up, as we say. You know, that sort of still stands. So, you know, I think it's important to meet probably with a number of architects and you know, we all have our sort of instinctual, you know, human cues that sort of say that this is somebody we'd like to work with for the duration of a number of years. And, you know, I think it is important to sort of potentially meet with a number of architects that you admire their work and try to, you know, get that read, and then we advocate two really important things. You know, this actually kind of stems from another book that I describe as a sort of a sequel, unrelated sequel to The E-Myth, which is
right.
a book called Principles by Ray Dalio. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that book as well. But that two of the core components are radical honesty and radical transparency. And so we advocate for like a really high degree of honesty and transparency with the clients. And that's in an effort to build that trust. So, you know, advice I would give then to a client wanting to engage an architect is to meet with a number of architects. You know, yes, most architects have their work displayed on a website. Seek recommendations from friends because, again, tapping into that network conversation, that means that, you know, a referral is obviously already high, you know, you're entering that relationship high on the sort of trust factor because there's other parties with invested interest in the success of the project, aka the mutual friend who introduced you. So, you know, seeking out referrals, looking through websites, meeting up with architects then that you whose work you kind of identify with, and seeing if that sort of mutually beneficial relationship is there. That's probably my advice, but the advice that I would give to potential clients.
Okay, great. It's so important, you know, what you just said. I think when it comes to auditioning, you know, you're sort of interviewing several, you're shopping around, so to speak, and that you also mentioned that people should follow their intuition, which I think is one of the keys to success. The most successful people follow their intuition, studies have found. So that I think that's so important. I'm glad you mentioned the Principles by Ray Dalio. I think that's a great book. That people should go out and read. So I'm curious, you mentioned this, some of them already. What important life lessons have you learned yourself or from others that you'd love to share with us?
Well, follow your intuition, just to, like that is, you know,
right.
you raised that point, but it's such a core. We're all guilty of like overanalyzing situations or overthinking them.
Right.
The answer is usually right there in the, you know, on the tip of our forehead, on the tip of our tongue.
Right.
And, you know, if you follow your intuition, I think you also live life with no regret because it's sort of directly responsible for how you feel or attributable to how you feel. And, you know, if you have an itch, sort of the same analogy, you have to scratch it. If I go back to almost 12 months ago, I got married in January.
Wow.
We went on our honeymoon, me and my wife, in late February. At that time, we didn't know anything about COVID as a pandemic, but pre-Christmas,
right.
again, you know, just over 12 months ago, I had decided that I would leave my job and I would start, And when we got back from honeymoon, we actually were in East Africa. And at that moment in time, we were in Egypt and COVID became a worldwide thing. And we had to skip, me being from Ireland, we were due to drop into Ireland for a week on the way back and see, you know, a different family that we hadn't seen in a while. But we had to cut that sort of leg off of the trip because of COVID. You know, then there we were back in New York. COVID was a thing. And
right.
I had left my job a number of months previously to start WOW.
Right.
And so I wasn't really at a crossroads, but I could say I was at a crossroads. I was actually quite single-minded in my
right.
approach. But I had, you know, decided that I wanted to start my own business. But now we're at the start
right.
of a pandemic. Well, we didn't really know
right.
start. We didn't really know what it was.
Right.
But I decided to follow through, and that goes back to the same thing. Like, I had an itch, and I needed
right.
to scratch it.
Right.
So, you know, if you have an instinct and an intuition, just follow that through. And it doesn't need to happen in that instance. I mean, I spent many years thinking about starting a business.
Right.
But ultimately, you know, one of the sort of tools psychologically or otherwise that I used was this idea of like, okay, I want to start a business in the future. I'm just going to one by one remove all of the barriers that are in my way. And that some of those barriers were skills that I didn't have. So I would go out and get those skills. And, you know, as I said, Christmas 12 months ago, I kind of found myself in a position. I was like, you know, shoot, there are no more barriers. I sort of gone about removing all the obstacles. But then was the biggest one of all, which was like, you know, the sort of, you know, the jump. And even then when an obstacle was put in front of me in the form of the pandemic and the kind of economic climate, I just said I was going to, you know, move forward with that anyway, because I didn't want to create any more excuses. So that kind of is all stemming from the same source of this idea of intuition. And if you have an itch, you know, you have to scratch it.
Right.
You'll live life with no regrets if you do so.
Right. Well, that's so important. You know, the advice you just gave for folks to live a life, you know, with no regrets, to remove the barriers and to create no excuses. And you did that. You could have used the pandemic as an excuse, but you didn't. And you thrived even during the midst of the worst of it. And obviously you're well positioned. So when the pandemic goes away, for the most part, you'll be there to kind of capitalize. And obviously you're hiring someone who's starting in February, which is great. As you grow and as the business expands, I'd love for you to come back on as a guest. You could talk about the new things that you're doing. It's so important to remove those barriers as well, you mentioned, and to jump, so to speak.
At some point you have to jump, there's without any barriers, you still have to make that leap. And there's definitely, you know, it's another obstacle, but it's a psychological one. And at that point, without any barriers in front of you, it's just a case of doing it, you know. Like the analogy, just do it. Run and don't look back at that point either.
Right. And that's how you live a life with no regrets, you know. And you have to have that courage to jump, particularly because so many people are so scared to move from employee to entrepreneur. And obviously, as an entrepreneur, many don't make it, which is also which makes it scarier. And that's why people need to read the book, The E-Myth.
I really think that is one of it, for sure. It was the book that influenced me most of all. And
it could
drop out, as you said. It could you know, his goal in writing that book was to reverse those percentages of successful and failed businesses. And I think if everybody read that, he might actually achieve that.
Wow. Yeah, that's such a critical book to read. And he's written several different ones for specific types of firms, like one for lawyers and one for medical professionals. So it's like a whole series of books. And accountants, too. So I'm curious. Obviously, The E-Myth is a great book. You also mentioned the one by Ray Diallo. Do you are there any other book recommendations that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, we in our conversations you know, before today's interview, we talked about a book called Never Eat Alone by Keith Ferrazzi.
Yeah.
I think Keith Ferrazzi is based in maybe on the West Coast, but he's, you know, he's a kind of networking guru. But again, he's probably the guy who flipped this idea of networking into forming mutually beneficial relationships. He uses this kind of concept of like co-elevating one another and sort of, you know, bringing your whole network along with your success so that everyone is successful sort of on the journey. And that's also an interesting thing about networking and why it has like a, you know, some people have a have a particular disdain for the word or for the
right.
idea of networking. It's not that you take advantage of somebody along the way, and
right.
it's that you can mutually sort of you know, carry one another forward, both personally and professionally. And so yeah, Never Eat Alone is the, I mean, I guess the title of the book is referring to sitting down for lunch, that you should never do that alone, because it's a, well, he immediately says that food is a great instigator of conversation. And you know, he advocates for surrounding yourself with a wide network of people, and he just then goes deeper. That's obviously just a kind of an analogy to perk someone's interest in picking up the book, but the book at large is all about networking, and it's sort of it makes it really relatable, and he really talks about the sort of interpersonal, sort of mutually beneficial aspects of building out a network of friends, professionally and otherwise. So that's another book that definitely influenced me in that side of it as well.
Right. You know, it's interesting. I've read some of that book, and he talks about, you know, generosity being one of the keys to success. And if you give to others, it comes back to you, and you engage in the law of reciprocity, which is also, you know, a key part of networking, and also getting referrals from people in your network. So, yeah, it definitely is a great book. He talks a lot about his story and how he came to the conclusion that networking was so important. It's definitely a great book. When you first mentioned it to me, I had heard of it before and actually started reading it as a result when you mentioned it to me. So thanks for that. And are you, by any chance, ever going to write a book yourself?
I do actually write in conjunction with reading a lot. I kind of take a lot of notes, and so, you know, that has amounted in a lot of writing. I don't know where that is leading to at the moment, but I think it's a possibility, and I wouldn't like to think or theorize, like, even the subject of that book, whether it specifically relates to architecture or you know, it's accumulation. It's one idea that sort of starts to ferment and stand out from all others, and that becomes a sort of topic of a book or a text. But there's a possibility. Again, I think, I'm not sure who said it, but a famous writer did quote that every person has a book within them. And since we talked about a number of books on this. They're all individuals whose that thing that they were most passionate about, they put down on paper, and that was, you know, then therefore a book that they authored. So, you know, I definitely have subjects that I'm passionate about, and I think, you know, I'm still early in my career, but later in my career, Ray Dalio also, he talks about sort of the three phases of a career. One is learning, let's say, your trade, the other is practicing your trade, and the last phase is then giving back to the next generation. And everybody, I think, at that point of giving back has a book in them, and he had a book in him, which was Principles. And it's as we've touched on, it's a really amazing book. So maybe I'll arrive at that point one day.
All right. Well, when you do write that book, I'll be the first in line to buy it, just so you know.
Great. Perfect.
And
we have one order in place.
Yes, one customer already. And, you know, I always tell people this, not only in addition to perhaps writing books, I always tell everyone that it's great for them to start a podcast as well. I'll mention that to you. I think podcasts are a great way to share your knowledge, but also to expand your network, to create and deepen relationships. So, you know, that's something you may want to look into. Obviously, the big problem with that is a lot of people don't have the time to consistently, you know, work on a podcast when they're doing other things.
Right.
But that's something you can consider as well.
Well, you're the expert, Luke. I think you're doing a great job with this podcast. So, maybe I'll just be
so
on the guest side of the equation for a while.
Yes. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's so important for for entrepreneurs and others to get exposure. There's websites and whatnot. I believe one called interviewingguests.com where you can it'll find you podcasts to be interviewed by, and it helps you to you know publicize your brand. So I'll give that to you. I'll email that to you later. So yeah, and I'm curious if you can just describe all the ways that people can get in touch with you so they can have someone like you, who I consider a major center of influence in their networks, or if they want to utilize your services or know someone who wants to utilize your services.
Yeah. Professionally speaking, our office is called WOW, W-A-U. Our website is wowoffice.com. That's WAUOFFICE.com. That's principally where you'll sort of get an insight into our work and what we're doing professionally. Ian Watchorn, again, my surname is spelled W-A-T-C-H-O-R-N. Ian is I-A-N. You'll get me on LinkedIn there, and that's probably the best way then to connect with me. I have lots of conversations with people on LinkedIn. And, you know, it's great because there's an immediate sort of interface. Well, you get a sort of quick snapshot of everybody's background. And, yeah, my email then is the first initial last name at wowoffice.com. So IWATCHORN at wowoffice.com. So those are probably the three best ways to get in touch with me and get an insight into our work a little bit more.
Great. That's wonderful. And I'm going to put all this contact information in the episode description box so people can see it and read it right there. So, and again, when you mentioned your email address, is that WOW Offices plural or just singular?
Singular. Yeah.
Singular? WOWOffice.com. Great.
Correct. Yeah.
So again, it's going to be in the episode description box. I wanted to, of course, thank you for coming on to be a guest of this show. I think you might be the first architect that we ever had as a guest.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
I want to thank you so much for that. It's greatly appreciated. I know you're a very busy man, and so I'm so thankful and grateful that you thought that sitting down and having a chat with us was a worthwhile endeavor for you. So thank you so much for that, Ian. You got it. And I wanted to go ahead and thank the audience for listening. This show wouldn't be anything without the guests and without the audience. So thank you guys out there. And again, so I think people need to reach out to Ian, connect with him, and put Ian in their network. And again, I want to thank Ian and I want to thank the audience. So I'm going to see everyone again in the next episode. All right. Thank you, everyone. And everyone have a wonderful day. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. You got it, Ian. Bye.
Thanks, Luke.
You got it. Hey, guys, before you go, just real quick, if you can just do me a favor, if you can head over to the Apple Podcast app, and if you're not there already, and if you can leave me a 5-star review, that would be great. If you love the show, if you can just go ahead and do that, and that will help to spread the word about the show, and other people can enjoy the show as much as you do. And so if you can do that, that would mean the world to me. And also, if you want to email me with any feedback or any praise or support, please feel free to go ahead and do that. And you can also email me to request to be put on our email list. So we can send you out emails when new episodes come out. So thank you very much for being a fan of the show. Thank you for listening to the show and supporting the show. So if you can do that, go out and give us a 5-star review on the Apple Podcast app. That would be great. And if you can email us so we can put you on the email list and email us with feedback and praise, that would be amazing. Thank you so much, and I'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.